This is an RNZ podcast.
They say it takes a village to raise a child. I'm Catherine Ryan, and here we draw on my conversations with experts on 9 to Noon to help you navigate family life. Why do some children lack motivation and drive? And how can parents guide them to regain direction? It's great to welcome back education consultant and parenting coach Joseph Dreesen. Joseph, hello.
Hello, Catherine, how are you?
Really good,
good
thanks.
Good to be in the program.
Yeah, great to talk. Why do some children seem to lack motivation and drive compared to others?
Well, I think we're talking in the context of self-management, that this particular theme of the talks we've been having. And some children, you know, we are motivated because we can reach our goals, which give us happiness and pleasure and positive feedback. And most children learn to do that with most parents. But there is a small number of children who are defeated by their lack of self-management skills. You could have other issues like learning difficulties, etc., but I'm just focusing on this, that there is not unusual that some children, some teenagers, are just down, they're just depressed because they can't make themselves follow through, they can't make themselves tidy up their work, they can't make themselves remember what to do, they go to school disorganized, and that could be from any range. Or some small children are just caught into a sort of an ADHD pattern of completely kind of being hyperactive and not calming down and not doing anything. And eventually, both the parent and the child give up because they lack the skills or the system isn't working. And the child just eventually then subconsciously or even consciously realizes, I'm just not making it. And then their energy goes down and they just stop trying. And they just go round and round, become addicted, say, to their phone when they're older, or as a young kid, just race around without any meaning, and they just don't feel good. And so it's usually, like if I talk from the experience of a school administrator and school teacher, usually it's when adults actually sit down and say, okay, it's not working, we've got to do something, that actually the child regains some hope because they feel, well, somebody's helping me.
Is it often?
That's what I'm talking about.
Is it at the heart of it is a lack of confidence or belief in your ability to complete things?
Yes, but that comes from the repeated number of failures when you've tried to do it and you can't because you lack the skills. Or you've got, remember, we're talking about here in the context of ADD, attention deficit disorder, which means that your neurological system is far more focused on the immediate, on the pleasurable or the exciting or the challenging, rather than the prioritized importance. And so you get sidetracked, you don't read your lists, you forget your diary, you don't pack your bags because something else takes the place. And you just get caught in the moment and you think, well, that's fine. That's what my brain told me to do. But now I've forgotten this. And so the repeated failures of that can cause a child to become deeply demotivated. This is especially when they reach adolescence or when they stop being young children, when usually, you know, most parents and teachers can manage them quite well, but then we start to expect from them to do their own thing, and they don't. So a significant number of teenagers don't do that well at school because, or they don't do well at their sport because they just lack that coherent planning and execution of what is important rather than what's immediate. And that sustained failure makes them feel down.
What do these children need? Not just the skills that they need, but what do they need from a parent to help them build that sort of sense of competence and get some success?
I think the first thing, like for these children, like the children who are going well, the parents would know it, but for these children, the parents have been defeated as well sometimes, and they just give up. Or they themselves may be genetically pre-designed to be a bit like that as well. So they think, well, we're all like that. The whole household is a bit chaotic. But what the children really most respond to, what I've found and what the research found, is that actually the adult takes it seriously and sits down with them and initiates a series of conversations initially, but then actions. So a conversation might be, well, this is not working. You're doing a year 11 NCA. You haven't started anything. It's a shambles and we've tried. Let's sit down and work out, and then let's have some expectations of change and let's do that together. And it's the determination of the adult plus their ability to actually analyze what's going on and guide a child, but their insistence that there will be accountability, you must do this, that sort of wakes the child up and think, well, maybe you can help me to manage myself. It's a bit like going to work where there are deadlines and you must keep them and you must come in time and you must clock in. And that sort of straightens up adults as well.
Some appear diffident, and can this be misinterpreted as masking the lack of, you know, that lack of competence or lack of belief in themselves?
Oh, absolutely. You could. There's lots of things which can cause a child to lose total confidence in themselves. And for example, you can have learning difficulties which are undiagnosed, like dyslexia. This is very serious. I was talking to a young boy recently, and he had a new pair of glasses for his dyslexia, and he was just so much happier because his reading improved. And he told me, well, without my glasses, the words, they just float around. And I don't know which order they come in because they change order. And with my glasses, suddenly the words are in order and I realize what the meaning of the thing is. So if you've got something like that, well, eventually, if nobody diagnoses this and does something about it, you can't work it. But it could also be like that your bedroom is total chaos and your parent thinks, tidy your room up. But as a seven-year-old, you can't do that by yourself. The organization is completely beyond you. Or you're even in year 12 and you've got a job and this and that and you're racing around and it's too much. Somebody should sit down with you and say, it's too much. You can't do all this. You've got to cut back and focus on your priorities rather than what you want. So there's lots of reasons. There are also more deeper reasons, like, for example, if the child is grieving for a divorce or the relationship between the parent and the child has become toxic or they feel unsupported. Those are all reasons why a child can become really distressed, depressed, and give up. But all these children need is an adult who sits down and says, well, I do love you, and we do want to make some changes to help you, so let's go through it. Let's listen to what the issue is, or the adult gets some advice, and then starts coaching the child.
Let's work through some of the strategies you recommend once that process gets underway.
Yeah, well, I would say that again, focusing, like, if a child is say, like, a really great case, if a child, say, is in a bad relationship with the parent, and then what is needed is the parent actually changes their behavior and becomes more caring and nurturing. So, but we've talked a lot about that. We are focusing here on the children who are totally disorganized. And so I think the thing the parents need to do is that it's not so much what you do, you just not got to do it a lot better and a lot more, in some ways, extreme. So, for example, some children cope incredibly well when they go to boarding school or when they're with a strict sports coach or when they grow up and they go in the army. And why is that? Because the system says this is a routine, this is what you must do, and we're not giving you any choices, and God help you if you don't do it. And suddenly these children, then these young adults, or they cope, they do well. And so what I proposed some parents is that they should have much better routines, which are followed quite strictly, and there are no changes. So we'll always go to bed this, we'll always unpack our bags when we come home. We always tidy up our toys once we finish with them, and the parent becomes quite focused on that. That's one. The second thing is you've got to realize that some children can't, they're just so scattered. It's not their fault. They're so scattered. They can't concentrate on what's most important now. And so very short lists with good colors in big letters on the fridge, changing them in the morning, in the afternoon, the evening, because some children just can't cope with 10 things. They just need three. Or little reminder cards. Or kneeling down at the child's level and looking them in the eye and say, remember, what is the most important thing you're supposed to be doing now? And so gradually changing that. So, and the third thing I just want to talk a little bit about is that children's environment if they can't cope with them, they find it hard to actually organize themselves. So, for example, in the Montessori system, it's very clear that's a well-organized a play system and learning system. Or like in Montessori, I went to a primary school where the children wrote down their times of what they were doing and how long they spent. So they became self-aware. So those first four things I would suggest, so that you have routines which are quite rigid for some children, that you've got much more simple and explicit communication systems like lists, cards, labels, that you have a much more simplified system for the child so they can know where to put it, have little boxes which are labeled, that you remove a whole lot of surplus toys and junk, and that you sort of really take action to say, hey, we're going to take it in hand and we're going to manage you and you're going to learn to manage yourself.
This isn't a one-off. You need to keep revisiting this and having catch-ups and sessions.
Absolutely. What is needed is the child, often what happens when a parent initiates this, they often regain hope and they think, oh, this is great, you know, but then their fundamental lack of organization and their lack of maturity makes them backslide. But a great parent just says, we're going to meet twice a week, or at the end of the day, come and see me, or you've done well, but this is not good enough. And so they revisit. And so the parent is on their case. I once had a wonderful talk with three senior boys in Scotland of why they like their school. And they said, oh, it's the teachers. And I said, what's good about them? They say, they're on our case. And these were boys, they were in year 12, and they're on our case. What they meant was, that they give us an organizational skill set and accountability, but they don't give up. They just make us accountable. And so I said, okay, what can I tell the teachers? What could do they to improve? And the boys looked at me and they said, to be even more on our case. And so some parents misunderstand how much guidance and structure and accountability and encouragement, yet, you know, be accountable. Children need. So
they're often
that's
will
what
tell
I
you
say,
the opposite.
Up the ante.
Yeah, they'll often tell you the opposite of what they want. It's the same as when you are, setting guidelines and boundaries for them, and they push back and, you know, call you this, that, and the next thing. They push back, but
absolutely.
They actually want it. What about
they actually want it? Mm. Yep.
What about goal setting?
Do.
What about goal
yeah,
setting with this group, Joseph? Sorry, we've got a wee bit of delay.
Goal setting is really.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we seem to have a bit of lag in the line. And it's because I'm speaking from the Netherlands.
Go ahead.
A bit further away from Wellington than usual. Goal setting is really important. And that's really interesting when you actually start analyzing how people set goals. Goals really need to be based on their dreams, on what they really want to achieve. And most children want to be happy and want to be good and want to reach their goals. So you can't ram goals down people's throats. You got to ask them. So, you know, what shall we try and achieve? And again, if I go to school examples, I used to ask students, what are your main goals? And nearly all students said that they wanted to achieve at school. And they might hide it and be macho and play the fool, but actually they do. So goal setting is very important, but each goal should have a reachable stage for what they can do, and they should tick them off and feel that we're getting there.
If this is about building a sense of confidence and competence in their ability to do this, do you need to help them also see the success and see the changes, whether they're big or small?
Oh, absolutely. Often a child, like it's very easy as a parent when you're overstressed and you're disappointed and you're hardworking, and some people are quite critical, is to actually focus on when the child fails its behavior. But the research shows that actually all of us are designed to follow positive reinforcement. And so you might say the child had actually quite a bad day, but you could start saying, well, some parts of the day went really, really well. I'm really happy about that. And so you keep on focusing on what goes well and how they could improve. And you keep on saying, well, you're just growing up and you're just getting a little bit better. And so the child changes its self-image from kind of I'm a total failure Because once a child has that self-image, I'm a failure, they will be surprised and will not accept your compliments because I know I'm a failure. But once a child says, well, maybe I'm getting better at whatever it is, then you can say, well, let's try and be a bit better next time. And so it pays you to be positive and say, well, let's go a bit further. Most children love that. They absolutely, and the whole primary school system is based on that, on sort of feedback, feed forward. What's next in your learning journey? So be positive, and be quite non-emotional. You don't have to be emotional and effusive. You say, this is good, this is good. Let's try and do this better. And you say, well, maybe it wasn't very good today, but yesterday was not as good as today. So you're getting better.
And that's a reason to pick some small battles, and so they can get used to that feeling of having a goal, achieving it, having a goal, achieving it.
Yeah. Yeah, and for some parents and children, what is important is that the child actually loses their willfulness. Because some children, all of us, you know, we can start rationalizing our bad behavior and say, well, you know, I'm not going to do it. And some children actually are quite stubborn that once they're into this dysfunctional behavior, they are not going to do it, you know. And the worst way it case is the parent getting really angry and has a massive rows and they're not doing anything and the whole thing backslides. But so it's better to actually start small. So I could give you an example, say, of a child who doesn't want to do their homework and the parent is really concerned because NCA level one is coming up and the exams are coming up. And so let's start small. Let's start really, really small. Let's start at 4 o'clock or 4:30 without any exception. You're going to unpack your bag, and that's for 10 minutes. That's all. And then there will be a battle of wills. They will forget, inverted commas. They'll be on their phone, inverted commas. They'll be suddenly ringing their friends, inverted commas. You know what I mean? And you say, no, 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 no. We've agreed. I'm waiting here. It will happen. And you got to win that. If you can't win that, well, what can you win? So, okay, they reluctantly sit down at the table and do it, you know, and unpack their bag. And they say, well, that's really good. You know, you tidy it up. And then you say, okay, now the next thing is that we're going to do. And so you carry on. You win one small battle. You make that a habit. And then you make the next a small habit. And you win that. And sometimes the initial winning that the parent actually prevails and the child gives in actually is what the child wanted. They wanted the adult to take charge, set limits, contain them.
Couple of questions for you. 15-year-old grandson, yep. Hates the world, hates school, has good friends and is a wonderful boy socially, but has no passion about anything. Help. Should have said he's very bright, but doesn't want to apply himself.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting. That's a really interesting case. Hate themselves, hate school. Well, that's a sign of a child who's actually deeply unhappy, doesn't want to apply themselves. The first thing is, I would say, go to the teacher and then the principal and say, why is this child not working, and what's happening? And then the second thing is, if all the boxes are ticked, they're able, they're competent, they might be in a deep-seated habit of not doing any work, and then coming to school feeling bad. And actually then rationalizing it and saying, well, this is what I'm doing, and then hating themselves on a very simple system. And what they need is a parent or a grandparent says, we're just not going to have it. I'm just going to insist that we're going to make a fresh start and you're going to do some work. I'm going to check it. I'm going to ring your teacher. And said, I would try that. Some children, just all they need is an adult who wins that battle and say, I want you to start work. On the other hand, some children, like, hate themselves, hate this. Sometimes you just want to think, well, what's going on? And I would advise just engage a clinical psychologist and get them assessed. Like, have they got, you know, what is the issue there? And because it's not a normal thing to do, but I have met a significant number of children who are highly negative because actually the parent haven't won the battles and the child is at the mercy of their own misbehavior, and then the whole consequences of that misbehavior make them feel depressed, and then they rationalize it.
One more. I have a smart, fun, funny, achieving 16-year-old in year 12, going back to school next year with no idea about what to do beyond college. His only real passion, skateboarding, but aside, jokes about being a pro skater, no idea. We've not been unduly concerned at this point about his lack of any plan or focus on life beyond school. Should we be? Should he be?
Yes.
Or still plenty of
yes.
time to figure that out?
No, I disagree entirely. The research shows that children who are focused are often very focused on very early on a goal. It might be a very simple, a kind of simplistic goal for a young child. They want to become a police person, but they have a series of dreams which they gradually develop. And the sad part is, often these are boys, is that boys lack seeing men at work. They're surrounded by women at work, which they either think, well, I don't want to become a childhood teacher, so that's not for me. But they don't see accountants at work. They don't see mechanics at work. So their masculine self-image is lacking in direction. And so the research shows that you want to expose them to adults doing things which inspire them. So I would advise the parents to start talking with the son and then say, well, what are some of the options which you, apart from skateboarding, would you be interested in, if you had a choice, would you be interested in becoming a police person? Or, and then I would actually organize placements to Polytech and visits to university and organizing uncles who do this particular job that has exposed that boy, that person, to real humans who do it. And like, say, in Germany, it is standard that all children at school have work placements. And so they might have three or four work placements during the year. And so they gain that knowledge and experience.
Thank you, Joseph. Thank you very, very much, Joseph Dreesen.